Casey, I'm an alcoholic.
Apologize for being a little late. I'm not used to driving in the hills so much. But it's pretty dry, I'll tell you that. Pretty place to get lost. I don't look like an outlaw saycracker, but but that's the name of my home group. I have a sobriety date. It's January 11th, 2004. I have a home group. I don't sponsor myself. It's a good thing I tried that when I first got sober, and it didn't work out well at all. It took me about 30 days of going crazy, you know, after stopping drinking, to realize that I really needed to start taking some action and start doing what you people were doing in AA. And I do it imperfectly, but, you know, that's the best way I know how to do it. Kind of weird here. I'm used to their kind of podium, but it's pretty cool. I like it. I'm going to tell you what I was like and what happened and what I'm like today. And, you know, in the past, I've kind of dabbled and jumped into the steps and started talking about the steps. But tonight I'm going to do something a little different because hopefully we've all gone through the steps and we know what they're about. So I'm just going to tell you what the 12 steps out of the big book with the sponsor has done in my life and what it's given me to give to you. You know, when I first got sober and first started giving a talk, you know, I heard a lot of people talking about their childhood, and I was like, yeah, well, my childhood was pretty bad, you know, and the longer, you know, I've been in AA, the more I realized it's not as bad as I was making it up to be, because I tried to wanted to make it look worse, because when I made it look worse, that's when everybody kind of liked you a little more. They kind of thought you were a little more tough kind of guy, or you went through a lot more, but the fact is, you know, I grew up, and I got absolutely everything that I needed. You know, I didn't get everything when I wanted, and that's when life was bad to me. That was my perception of a bad childhood, you know, when I didn't get what I wanted, but when I did, everything was well. And that's the story of my whole life, you know. I was good when I got what I wanted, not good when I didn't get what I wanted. And, you know, and when I react, you know, in a negative way, of such, it's because I'm making decisions based on myself every single time, and I'm paying the price for it. I grew up with a mother and a father, and, you know, they separated, so it was a little back and forth kind of thing, and, you know, it might have bothered me a little bit, but not too much. At that point, I was just a kid, about 5 years old, so, you know, I got to go to my father's on the weekends and got to pretty much spend a lot of time by myself, you know. Go over there and, you know, the old man would be passed out by about 8:30 or 9 o'clock, you know, with the beer in his hand, you know, if I wasn't running them for him. So I started getting used to that and, you know, I started seeing a lot of ways how alcohol wasn't a good idea, you know, for me to go ahead and take that drink. I knew at times that I wanted to try to take a drink of alcohol so I could feel cool, you know, so I could at least try to have that experience. And I didn't like the taste of it. And there was an occasion where my dad said, "So, son, you want to have, you know, a couple beers?" And I was like, "Yeah, man, I do." And he let me have a couple, but the thing was they were non-alcoholic beers. And, you know, I'm sitting there getting all pumped up for that. And anyway, he gave me a non-alcoholic beer. I didn't even like that. And, you know, so kind of jumping back to it, you know, my life was good, you know, a lot better than a lot of other people's lives. And, you know, even things that have happened in my past, they're an asset to me now. You know, my past, you know, my drinking career, the way I thought, the way I react in a lot of situations are complete assets to me today in my life. You know, it's good today to actually have a purpose, you know. I kind of just went through basing every minute of the day of how I was going to get drunk, you know. And if I couldn't get it with the money in my pocket, I was definitely going to get some money to get that. You know, if I wasn't going to get any money, I was going to steal it. So, and that's exactly what I did. I was very dishonest, very selfish, very inconsiderate. And I could still be like that in sobriety. I definitely see that when I take inventory. you know, and I tried to think, you know, what would God have me be? You know, not really sure, but I'm sure it would be giving. God would like me to be giving, you know, to help other people. And, you know, seeing all certain things in my childhood, not really being attracted to beer, I started hanging around with a crowd, and they were all doing those things, you know, where they were drinking and doing other things, and I just wasn't interested in it. And at that age, around a lot of people, you know, you would think that everybody was like that. Well, I wasn't, and offered several times, and I politely declined every time. Until one day, something happened, you know. I started thinking, well, you know, what if it's not a bad idea to take a drink? You know, what if there's something good to come out of this? And how quickly I forgot, you know, all the things that I had personally seen. And, you know, I was getting all excited about it, and I was like, you know, Alex, let's go, you know, get some of that, you know, liquor out of your mom's cabinet. And they were very different people than myself, and I guess all of us as a whole, because I think that bottle sat there for quite a while. And so what we did was we stole the alcohol, and all we had time for was to take, what I took was four shots. It didn't taste good, but I tell you what, it made me feel good. And that's all I cared about at that time. And eventually growing to like the taste. But at that point, man, I really felt great, you know. I didn't feel like myself, and I tell you what, that was a great place to be for myself, for me. Didn't feel like myself, wanted to go out, wanted to, you know, go hang out with the ladies, wanted to go have a good time. So we went and we watched a movie, and, you know, everything went well. I tried to start a fight, and, you know, because some guy wasn't paying attention to me when I wanted him to. So right off the bat, you know, just completely all in self. And so, you know, that night went well. So I had another reason to want to take another drink. And, you know, at that point I wasn't obsessing madly on a daily basis about how I was going to get more alcohol. I just didn't do that right off the bat. But, you know, my next drink was a bottle of vodka. Drank about three quarters of it, only left my buddy for about a quarter of it. Got to the point, you know, it tastes like water. You know, let's drink the rest of it. So drinking that water, I blacked out and, you know, came to in a shower. You know, I had fallen down, hit my head, just done crazy stuff anyway. You know, you have a lot of people saying, Casey, why did you do this? What's your problem? What's wrong with you? You know, a lot of concern, and the first thing I think of is, yeah, that was crazy, man. You know, and that's really what I thought. I didn't think, like, oh, my life is over. I'm never going to drink. I just said, man, that was crazy. And I didn't have any doubt in my mind that I wasn't going to drink again, because it still gave me a great feeling of freedom at that time, and it was just so different from anything I've ever known. So I kind of just stuck with it. It made me feel good. So, you know, I continued to drink. I continued to be selfish and dishonest. I stole a lot of things. I didn't really care about what anybody thought. Didn't care about, you know, the feelings of other people. It was all about what I could get for me to make me feel good, you know. And, you know, so I continued to do those things. I continued to do them. Also, you know, I played a lot of baseball. You know, I did travel teams, things like that, and it was something I really enjoyed. Didn't know whether I was going to do anything in the future, probably not, but I knew that I had done it my whole life, and I enjoyed it a lot. But eventually, the more that I drank, the more I fell in love with it. You know, and if there's anything that I fell in love with first, it was definitely alcohol. And it got to a point where, you know, I just can't do this baseball thing anymore. It's just really getting in the way of what I want to do, and what I want to do is drink. And, you know, so just out of the blue, it wasn't something I gradually let go of. One day I just said, I'm not going to play anymore. I'm like, you're not going to play anymore. I'm not going to play anymore. So that was it. And it's kind of funny. The way I look at the decisions I made and the decisions that other people made at that time, it's quite different and ended up in different places, but I'm more than happy to be where I am today. You know, I wouldn't trade that for anything in the world. So, anyhow, at this time, you know, I'm stealing all the booze that I can get, okay? I'm drinking all the booze that I can get. You know, I'm drinking, you know, Kentucky bourbon whiskey, in the morning in these plastic cups, you know, before I go to school, because I have this feeling when I wake up that if I don't take this drink of alcohol, I don't know how long through the day I can actually make it, you know, before I feel like I'm going to lose my mind. And that was what started to happen. You know, on the beginning of my 11th grade year, I'd gotten to a point where I would sit in a classroom full of people, probably about this size, a little bigger, and I sat there, and I was just trying to just grip onto something, you know, and I felt like I was going to lose my mind if I did not get out of that place. So I jumped up, started yelling at a couple people, and I was like, you know, I don't like you, I'm getting out of here, I'm never coming back. And I was really starting to lose it, you know. I was having trouble making it to class at that time, so I left school, said I wasn't going to go anymore, ended up going to an alternative school. This place was great, though, because they had bathrooms in the classrooms, and, you know, I had a couple experiences with some white lightning in those bathrooms, and it definitely helped me get through class, I can tell you that much. So, you know, at that point, nothing in my relationships are really amounting to anything good. You know, I'm treating everybody like they just don't matter in my life, you know, and all I'm concerned about is what you're going to give me, you know, and that's when I feel okay. So I'm leaving school all the time. I don't need school. I've already got my future planned out. I'm going to do this. I'm going to take over my dad's business, which I ended up running into the ground after I got out of high school. I absolutely did. And it's unfortunate, but... Crash. But anyway, so I get to the point where, you know, 5 days out of the week, I'm going to school, 3, maybe 2 days out of the week. Okay, it's becoming a problem. I'm getting suspended left and right for absurd things. And, you know, I end up getting kicked out. Every time I come in, I say, well, I'm going to do things different this time. I'm going to be, you know, a better student, you know. And this is all just blah, 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 so I can get everybody off my back so I can get back into school. And eventually, I just didn't care. You know, I was like, I'm leaving. So, you know, I'm starting problems with, you know, security guards. They're physically throwing me into the wall. You know, I've got police, you know, telling me to stay down at the wall, and they're watching me during school. And, you know, I really have not a lot of sense about anything. So, skipping school all the time, drinking. Eventually, I get out, man, and I'm just heading down big time. And I don't know what's going on in my life, why everything ends up the way it does. So I go into a detox center, Chippenham Hospital, and I get out there. You know, I only wanted to go in there for like a day or two, or you know, whatever. And they wanted to keep me in there for like seven or eight days. And I go in there because apparently there's some problems with my drinking or the way my life looks. And the doctor says, you're a dry drunk. And I'm like, what did he just call me? I'm sitting there getting upset and I want to argue with this guy. And why am I there in the first place? So right there, I was in a lot of ways, I think I was delusional to quite a bit of things. And, you know, but when I got out there, I saw the error of my ways. And, you know, I had a plan. I really... In my heart, I had a plan that I was going to change things around, you know, and I was going to do well, and I wasn't going to get fired 2 or 3 times a week from, you know, my old man, you know, when I went to work for him. But I went back there, and I was doing great for 5 months, and somebody said, hey, I was like, no, thank you, I'm doing good, man. So, you know, that time came where, you know, I looked around with everybody that I knew, and it's okay, I can go ahead and take a drink, you know. And I was quite nervous about it, to be honest with you, about taking this drink. Because somewhere in my mind I thought, well, Casey, you know where you've been. But then all of a sudden, bam, it's okay to take that drink. So I take a couple shots of vodka, and, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, you know, just before I took those drinks, I said, I'm just going to have 1 or 2 drinks a week. That was my plan of drinking, which I never did that before. I never found a point in it. But anyway, right off the bat, I took my first couple drinks right on into jail. And, you know, the one thing that I want to say, though, is all these, you know, jail time and things like that, you know, but not what make me an alcoholic. You know, because I've known a lot of heavy drinkers who have had the same consequences. You know, but what makes me different is that allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind, and I can identify those to a T. But these are things that happened when I was out there. So I get locked up. I'm pretty embarrassed about that. I'm more worried about what my family's going to say to me about it. And when the fall clears, you know, I'm back in the game again. I'm drinking the way that I want to drink. You know, one night I think it's a great idea to go down to the beach, drive 2 hours down to the beach just to dip my feet in the sand at 2 a.m, okay? I get down there, my buddy's driving the car, and he passes out because he starts to snore. I'm like, well, what's going on? I look over there, he's out cold, and I'm slapping him, trying to grab the car. We lose control, I put a lady in the wall, we hit the Jersey wall 4 times, get out, get locked up. Not going to do that stuff again. I'm not really sure whether I said I'm not going to drink again, but what I said was I'm not going to do that anymore. 6 days later, I got my first DUI. So within 3 to 4 months, you know, I'm in jail like 3 times, and you know, at this point, man, I'm really bummed out. You know, I'm like, Mom, bail me out. She's like, No, we're on a cruise to the Bahamas. And I'm like, oh, well, that's just great. You know, everybody's treating me wrong. You know, and that's the first thing I think is how everybody's doing me wrong. And start trying to do that blame game. But anyway, after that time, you know, I tried to think about, you know, going into college and just doing these things and really trying to put a plan in my life. And I just couldn't do it, man. I just couldn't do it because when I woke up, I had to have a drink so bad. You know, I'd go to work. Some days I would have to leave at 10 o'clock a.m., go home and take a drink. Sometimes I would get through the whole day. Sometimes I wouldn't even go to work. Sometimes I'd be drunk till 5 a.m. and say, well, man, I gotta go to work. You know? And I'd show up to work, I'd be drunk, half drunk from the night before, reeking of booze. My old man would say I'd come in there, he'd say one word to me, I'd go off on him, come back 3 hours later and just, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, and just get real remorseful like that. And that's exactly the way my pattern was. You know, I had to have those drinks with me before I could even go home. So, I'm hanging around with these guys, not a lot at this time, flipping around to different people a lot, and, you know, I'm starting to drink at times early in the morning, and I'm passed out within the first hour, hour and a half that I drink. You know, I pass out, and I wake up another hour, 2 hours later, I do it again. You know, and they're all laughing at me, so I'm like, this isn't good. How can I make this thing work? So I'm not going to drink liquor anymore. I'm just going to drink Budweiser. I'm just going to drink, you know, whatever it is. And that was going to be my solution to this problem I had. And what happened was nothing changed. Nothing changed at all because I have the allergy to alcohol. It doesn't matter what kind of alcohol. I've gotten to the point where I've run out of alcohol. The first thing I went to was a bottle of NyQuil, you know, because I needed that alcohol. And and I don't use that today. I don't use alcohol in any form at all. You know, I take that sentence quite literally. And, you know, if I'm still doing those things, what I see is that I'm still thinking that I have power over alcohol, you know, when I do certain things like that. And same thing with mouthwash, you know, non-alcohol mouthwash. I find it every time I go to the store. So these things are happening. I'm sitting in a room with my best friend at that time, and I can't even talk. I'm paralyzed with this fear because I can't stop my body from moving, you know, and I'm trying to sit on my hands so, you know, he won't see me, and I'm getting paranoid that what is he thinking of me? He's seeing me fidgeting and just moving like I'm some crazy guy, and losing it quite a bit. So at this point, I'm coming up on my second DUI. Should have had a third. Doesn't matter. Leaving this, once again, driving home drunk like I did pretty much on a daily basis in any vehicle I could get my hands on. And I'm coming home, down a hill, running, hit a tree. This time I crushed the front portion of my skull, shattered my eye socket, ripped my brain open in several locations, and I'm sitting there pretty much bleeding to death. And you know, the whole front end of the vehicle is crushed into this tree. Now, and this is all from what I hear. I have no recollection, no feeling of anything. And apparently I laid there for a good 30, 45 minutes before somebody found me. And it's a good thing they found me. So they medevaced me to MCV. And I was in a medical induced coma for two or three days, one of the two. And when I woke up, I looked in the mirror and I was like, what's going on? And I knew something wasn't good, and I see everybody looking at me, and everybody seems to be kind of broken up a little bit. And I'm thinking, oh, man. You know, like, this puts a dent in my plans. And that's really what I thought. I was like, oh, like, I don't feel like going through this. You know, that's what I'm thinking. I don't feel like going through this. But, you know, at that point, I start thinking about how, you know, I never should drink again, how I don't want to drink again, you know, how this is enough. I just can't take this crap anymore. You know, because I've had an experience where I've hit my knees in tears and saying, I think I'm going to die. I can't do it anymore. I've had that experience prior to this experience, you know. And I can sit here and tell you that I got my feelings back when I came into AA, but I don't know about you, but that's kind of what drug me in here, is feeling the way I felt. And so everybody's telling me, it's not a good idea for me to drink. And my mom's saying, you're not going to drink again, are you? And I'm like, oh, no. And I didn't have that answer. I didn't have that answer that day than I did the day before. I had lost the power of choice absolutely by that time in my life. I'm thoroughly convinced of that. Also, my friends are coming up this time. All the guys I'm drinking with all the time. Casey, you need to stop drinking. I'm like, oh, not you guys too. So everybody's seeing this but me. Everybody's seeing this, and they had seen it before that. So I say, okay, I'm not going to do it anymore. Put my fist on it. You know, I'm really not going to do it. And about a week later, you know, I'm drunk again. You know, and my buddy's saying to me, are you sure you want to do this? Oh, you know, no problem. And in my head I'm saying, this is not a good idea, Casey. Don't do this. And then I couldn't stop it. You know, that compulsion was so overwhelming. I just couldn't slow it down. So, once again, you know, for the next few months, I'm back at it. You know, I'm passing out, blacking out, hitting my head on, you know, brick floor down at the pool hall. Just running the same old game, getting the exact same thing every time. And at this time, I think, well, I'm just going to drink for the rest of my life because I just can't get free of this stuff. And, you know, the only time anything shut off in my head is when I passed out. And, you know, I got 12-step for a second time within those couple years. And this guy, he was my best friend. He had been sober for a couple years at this time. And he started telling me about, you know, I was kind of receptive, kind of not. He started telling me about how his life was different today, you know, that day that we talked. And he started talking about how his family, you know, how they were getting along. And he was telling me he had his girlfriend with him, you know, had a nice-looking girlfriend, and was telling me about how he had a job and how he had these really neat experiences. And he wasn't talking down to me. He wasn't shoving AA down my throat. We were just sitting there talking, you know, talking. That's all we were doing. And I was like, ah. So he left, and, you know, I'm still living with my mom at this time, and I'm walking up to my room, and, you know, she goes, you're just gonna get drunk again, aren't you? And the thing that I said in my mind, I said, I have no clue. I didn't have any clue that day than I did the day that I was in the hospital. And something happened though. That time, I didn't take a drink the next day. I knew that I couldn't stay in Virginia, and if I could, you know, what have you, whatever it is. But the fact was, I felt that I needed to be locked away. I felt that I had to be away from civilization in order not to drink so I could have a chance. And that's really the way my thinking was going. So I went as far down south as I could go. It was either northern Virginia or southern Florida. Southern Florida, man, that'll solve all my problems. Right there on the beach where it's all nice and warm, all this stuff. I get down there to solve all my problems. And I find out that, you know, you can put me in Jamaica for 30 days without a drink, and I'm going to go crazy, man. I really am, because my life without a solution is a mess. You know, me trying to manage my life is a mess. you know, I can't manage it today any more than I could when I came in here. You know, when I came into AA, I had to kind of give myself to you before I could give myself to anything. I had to kind of sit back and say, well, you know, these people seem to have something going on here, man, and I really want it because I don't want what I had before. And, you know, I had some times where I was like, I don't want to do this or I don't want to do that, but I still did it. You know, I think my spiritual condition is based on what I do and not what I feel today. And one of the most spiritual things I can do is be considerate of another human being. And I learned that through the process of taking the steps and looking back on you know, my actions, the way I was living my life. And when I came up to that inventory, I was able to see once again how I affected other people. And it wasn't all about me. And so when I go to an AA meeting today, you know, and in the beginning it wasn't like this, but when I go to an AA meeting today, I try to think of somebody other than myself. You know, I get coffee before the meeting. You know, I use the bathroom before the meeting. You know, I try to listen, you know, to the solution. You know, and if I'm going to bring a problem to an AA meeting, I need to make sure I have a solution for that problem. Because we've all got the problem. We've all got the problems, you know. But, you know, I need to hear the solution. I need to share the solution. You know, I try to stay seated. I try to have courtesy, consideration for the guy sitting next to me. Because I get distracted in AA meeting. And, you know, I want to make sure that the guy sitting next to me feels okay. You know, that he can come to an AA meeting and he can focus and he can really hear something. But that's just for me. And I tell you what, you know, even when things are not the way I like them to be, you know, I still sit through it. Because if I sit through it, everybody else has to. And I'm nobody special. And trying to stay, you know, structured and stick to my committed meetings is very important in my sobriety today. A place where people expect me to be. A place where I expect me to be. And there's a discipline within that. And I get to know a lot of people. Not just at my home group, which is extremely important to me. But other meetings. You know, I come to these meetings. And I know all these people I never would have met. You know, and never would have formed relationships with. If I only went there one time. You know, or every once in a while. And I had a guy come up to me last week and say, hey man, you know, I'm such and such. It's good to see you, you know. I haven't, you know, been here in a while, but every time I come here, you're here. You know, and that's good. You know, people know that you're still around, and this thing is working, you know. So, I think for myself that that's a very important thing. You know, I've had the privilege to sponsor other guys. You know, when I first started doing that, I really wanted to wrap my hands around them and try to micromanage their lives, you know, make them do everything I wanted them to do. And every time, man, I was either getting a resentment or, you know, I was just trying to play, you know, place blame on them. And the whole time that wasn't working. And I like the way that my sponsor does it for me today. You know, if you want what I have to do what I do, if not, feel free to sponsor yourself. And when you want to jump back on the wagon, let me know. You know, and I've been off the path. And I was off the path probably a month, month and a half ago. And he said, Casey, what's going on? And when he said that, it was like, you know, a brick to my chest. I was like, you know, and he said, you know, you've been losing a lot of excitement, you know, than when we first started taking steps. What's going on? He goes, when you're not excited, I'm not excited. You know, he said, and when you're excited about AA again, let me know. And he wasn't firing me in any way, but what he was doing, that was the most effective way I've ever experienced in making me reconsider the things that I was doing. You know, I was like, wow, he's so right. Look at this and look at that. You know, I want to be excited about Alcoholics Anonymous. I am excited about Alcoholics Anonymous today. When somebody asks me to do something, I do it. You know, I don't say, well, let me think about it and I'll call you back. You know, I don't do that. I do it if I can absolutely do it. And I get the best results when I do what I want to do and when I do what I don't want to do. There's a lot of do's in this book. I see a lot of instruction in there, and I try not to leave it too optional, because if I leave it too optional, then I'll end up taking a left when I should have taken a right. And, I've formed a lot of good relationships so far in my sobriety. I haven't been sober very long, and I know that today. You know, I told my sponsor, I said, listen, I really don't know that much, man. He goes, that's grace. That's a good place to be. I was like, that's good. I experienced, some good relationships in sobriety so far. And the best way that I can keep, and have a good relationship with somebody else is if I put my primary purpose ahead of that. You know, anywhere in my life, I have to put my primary purpose first. You know, whether I'm young, whether I'm old, whatever it be, none of that stuff matters. The fact is that I'm an alcoholic, and I need to carry this message to another alcoholic, period. And that works out. It's worked out quite well so far. The good things that have happened in Alcoholics Anonymous, as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous for me today, is that I've got, like I said, more genuine relationships than I ever thought I had in the past. I can be there for other people. I can hold a job. I don't wake up every day thinking about alcohol anymore. I don't obsess. The obsession has been removed. And as long as I'm centered in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not skating around the fringes of it, it's bulletproof, it's drunk proof. And if I'm hanging around the outside, like it says, there's going to be that time and that day where I'm going to drink again. And I'm convinced of that because I know, I'm an alcoholic and I know what kind I am. And I know how easily it is for me to kind of jump off my leash. Because if you let me off of that leash, I'm going to go scurry off. And before you know it, I'm in a bad situation. I'm causing harm and I'm making amends and just having all kinds of fun. And when I first somewhere within the first year that I was sober, I started having a desire to learn more about AA and where I came from and all those things so I could have a better understanding of how Alcoholics Anonymous came to be and where pieces of the 12 steps had come from. And I really had this thing for Dr. Bob, and I wanted to go out there so bad, and I wanted to go to Dr. Bob's house and do all this fun stuff, and never thought I was going to be able to go. So one time, a friend of mine, Sammy and Valerie, they were like, we're going out to Ohio. Do you want to come with us? I'm like, sure. And I was really hoping that we were going to go to Dr. Bob's house. And they said, guess what? We're going to stop at Dr. Bob's on the way. I was like, yes. And we go up there, and it's good going to those things. It's not going to keep you sober, but it's definitely a great experience to have in sobriety. So we went up there, and, we went into Dr. Bob's room. All those things were great. I got a good feeling from that. But what really punched me in the chest the most was when I went into Sue Window's bedroom, and I saw the bed where Dr. Bob had taken all those men up there to that bed and had them surrender right then and there. And that really struck a chord with me because I could feel their hopelessness, I could feel that because I've experienced myself, and I started to well up, because that's an emotional thing when you can really click with somebody else. I got put on a lot of medications when I was drinking, antipsychotics, antidepressants, all this stuff to fix me, and none of that stuff worked. Went to psychiatrists, none of that stuff worked for me. But when I sat down and I talked to another alcoholic and really had a message carried to me of depth and weight, that's when I really connected. And if I'm going to stick around in Alcoholics Anonymous, I need to feel like I can identify, and I need to feel like I belong to this place. And, taking the steps, I just don't help people when it feels, convenient for me. That's why AA is still here today. You know, thank God for the traditions. Without the traditions, you know, I'm sure it would have fallen apart a long time ago. All of us trying to manage each other's lives. But, you know, due to traditions and the primary purpose, you know, when we carry this message to somebody else, they're going to do it for somebody else. And it just keeps on rolling. So that's why it's important for me to be willing to do that on a daily basis. You know, I do this thing so imperfectly, but I tell you what, I learn from it every single time. I learn from it. And I share it with other people. It's been a fun life so far, you know. And life is better than I ever imagined. You know, and these promises, they come and they go based on what I'm doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you can read those promises to me today, and I'll say, yeah, I got them. I got them in my life right now. Then you can read them to me tomorrow. And, yeah, man, I'm not getting them all. Because I'm not doing something, you know. I go back and I, you know, read page 52, and I look at the bewilderments, and I start thinking, well, that was me before I came in, you know. That's what I was bringing to Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I start reading the ninth-step promises and things like that, and I go, that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous right there. Yeah, that's the heat of it. And, you know, I see other people around me. Something happens with them when something happens with me. You know, the relationships with my family today are good. You know, they're a lot better than they were before. You know, they come to me when they want to talk to things, and I still come to them. You know, and I really have to be thankful for people who aren't alcoholics, who kind of helped me in this direction, who kind of showed me, you know, this treatment center, which showed me AA. Because when I got sober at first, I had a dollar, four quarters every single week. But some way, I had food, and I had a van to give me a ride to an AA meeting, and that's absolutely everything I needed. You know, I went from a kid who wouldn't take the hat off his head because of fear of what everybody would think of him and how everybody would look at him. And, you know, today, I'm standing up in front of everybody because I'm okay with me, you know. I feel that freedom, you know. I feel a connection that I didn't have before, you know. And I'm able to look at each and every one of you guys and tell you that I've got good news. There's a solution, you know. And there's a source of power that I don't have, you know. Stating the problem, I need a solution. And I find that solution through the rest of the 12 steps. And I just want to thank you for asking me to come up here and give a talk tonight. And I'm going to enjoy the beautiful ride home. Thanks.